there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed...
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am here with Connor Orr of the Weekside Podcast. And Connor, that was a Week 9 Sunday full of shocks and surprises and laughs and cries. And it was a roller coaster.
As Chris Farley said in Wayne's World, good beer, good times, good friends.
Yes. I think we can cue that up for like any week. Right? I think it always
true.
Fits.
Yeah, that's all true. Right. That's a universal statement.
Let's start with the Sunday night game. It was certainly not the most dramatic game of the week, but it was, I think, and again, it was a week with a lot of surprises. This one was shocking in the lopsidedness of it all. Saints just obliterated the Bucs. The game was not competitive from the start. I'm still stunned by this because I think the Bucs are the most complete team in football. I thought they might not win this game. I thought they probably would, but you know, I certainly didn't think they'd just be completely outclassed by the Saints here. And we'll start with the optimistic side, and that's the Saints defense, which has underachieved to this point. And especially that defensive backfield, you know, they're so veteran back there that you kind of looked at it in August and just said like, okay, it's going to be a good group, solid at least, maybe spectacular, but it's going to be a good group. And it just hasn't been the case this year since week one. And now that the Bucs come back into town, the Saints' defensive backfield sort of ramps things up again.
Yeah, and you have to take it for what it is, right? I mean, the Buccaneers got behind so fast and so quickly. And if you have that defensive backfield and then you have the complementary pass rush, you can essentially take over any game that you want, especially if you're that talented. And you have guys like Davenport and Onyemata and Cam Jordan. And, you know, all that stuff blends into a complete and total blowout when you have, you know, that defensive backfield and when you're facing a completely immobile quarterback who can't change the count defensively and punish you in any other way except for his arms. So I think that this, everything just sort of rolled beautifully into the Saints' hands, and they play that game. You know, that's the best game that they're going to play all year probably. And, you know, it just, it's unfortunate for Tampa because, you know, now you're two games behind, you know, the team that you're probably going to compete against to win the division.
Yeah, and it's the defensive backfield was good. The pass rush, I mean, it's a good pass rush, and the Bucs have a good offensive line. I will stand by that even with Ali Marpet out. And same thing as week one. It was complete dominance by this Saints front against this Bucs offensive line. And I don't really know how to add up. I don't know if it's like an individual matchup type thing. Donovan Smith, who I think is a perfectly fine sort of baseline level left tackle. I mean, Trey Hendrickson just owns him, and it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
No, it doesn't, but it was, I think it was a group effort. We talked last week about how I love Next Gen Stats does average separation from the quarterback on any given snap, and so a league average on any given play is 4.5 yards. Every single one of the Saints pass rushers were underneath that by at least a yard this weekend, or last night. So I think that there was a lot to like there, but again, I mean, I think that you're seeing, and we'll get to other games where we talk about the Dolphins, we talk about the Cardinals, talk about the Ravens, and all of those teams can change the count and make things more difficult. But when you still play someone like Tom Brady, who's just so stationary, and a game's not going well like that, it's the one thing that it's almost like you can't generate a comeback as quickly, because any team with even a middling or average pass rush is going to punish you like the Saints were able to do last night.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, it took the Bucs until well into the second quarter to get their first down of this game, and it never got better. It wasn't even like a garbage time performance where it's like, you know, whatever, a couple of touchdown drives in the fourth quarter, and you know, you can see there maybe something to grasp onto and be optimistic about, but that didn't come either. They kicked a field goal, I guess, so good for them.
That field goal won me my fantasy football matchup, which was
nice. Did it really?
Yeah, because I was losing to the team who had the Saints defense, and thus that field goal brought them underneath the threshold, which is nice. But back to things that people actually care about, I would say that it's so weird to me that there have been games, and maybe it's just uncharacteristic because Tom Brady's involved and he's never been on a team that's looked unprepared for anything before, but you know, they can look so ready and so dominant for some games and then just so completely like, you know, they were preparing for a different opponent almost, like they got the playbook switched or something during the week and they showed up at the last minute, and you know, that's what they look like this weekend. And it's just so weird to say, and maybe that's just our inherent bias from the way that we viewed him in New England and how they were always prepared for big games and stuff like that, but it's so unsettling to see, you know, Brady in this kind of atmosphere and this environment just so kind of buried underneath the moment, you know.
Yeah, and look, Saints are now season sweep is completed of the Bucks. Obviously, driver's seat there in the NFC South, and they won 5 in a row. And you know, we kind of set that team aside a little bit. You know, we were all sort of on the Bucks and the Seahawks and the Packers for a little while, and it looks like the Saints are just sort of reemerging as maybe the favorite in the NFC when it's all said and done here.
But, they have the two best quarterbacks in the division, Gary, Drew Brees and Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill, oh my goodness, I did appreciate the fact that they just flat dropped back with Taysom Hill for the first time in a long time. And he did complete that pass to Jared Cook, which was, you know, completed passes are good, but he was also wide open and threw it like a full yard behind him. So,
you know what Sean Payton's doing, and this is like, I would say this is basic human instinct, but I'm guessing at some point, I know you played video games, but do you ever have the old like NCAA football games?
Yeah.
And so you create a dynasty and you have this quarterback that's great, but then, like, you know, you play like 30 games in a row with him and you're just bored. You want something else. You're dominating and you're just like, let me throw this bulky Mormon guy into the fold just to, you know, just to mess around. And that's what he's doing. I think he's just having fun with the whole situation. Good for him, you know. I think Sean Payton is a lot like all of us. He's just bored during this time, and Taysom Hill is his muse.
That's and I also love Bulky Mormon as sort of an automated name that you can plug into NCAA football. Let's go on to this. This was a milder surprise, but a surprise nonetheless. Seahawks Bills, and I want to throw this out here to start. Obviously, every time Josh Allen plays a game, no matter what happens, there is a people just shout at each other on social media. I mean, you're either he's either the greatest quarterback of all time or he's the worst quarterback of all time, and it just oscillates between the two, and everyone gets really worked up about Josh Allen. If you look at Josh Allen this year, and obviously Josh Allen, when you look at the season as a whole, has improved immensely over what you saw last year, and last year he had improved immensely over what you saw as a rookie, so it's a good trajectory for him. But one of the reasons they brought him into Buffalo, one of the reasons they liked him in that 2018 draft, is because they said, well, with that arm talent, with the velocity, with the way he spins the ball, you can play through the, you know, the wind and the sleet and the snow in Buffalo in December and January and that sort of thing. And obviously we're small sample size at this point, but the games he's really struggled to throw the ball in have been the bad weather games this year. The good weather games, and we had, I mean, it's always beautiful up there in Western New York, but it was especially beautiful in Orchard Park on Sunday. Just unseasonably warm, absolutely no wind there. Those games, those ideal condition games he's played this year, he has been near flawless in those games. So I think there's maybe just something to be said for the fact that he is a little bit erratic. He's going to be streaky as a passer, and when you factor in the weather, that, you know, his already sort of fringy accuracy maybe gets pushed the wrong direction, whereas when things are sort of nice and sunny, things are, you know, the ball placement becomes a little bit easier.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would also say that, on Sunday, he is throwing fewer tight window throws than a lot of quarterbacks in the league, and I think that needs to be taken into account. Now, he's hitting his deep thirds, you know, it's not like, and he's hitting passes to the boundary, so it's not like the arm talent isn't there, but I think that that offense is just so pretty and it's schemed so well. And I think that I'm not saying anybody can go 31 of 38 against the Seahawks for three touchdowns. I'm saying maybe 10 other quarterbacks, 12 other quarterbacks in the league could do that. Josh Allen is one of those. I think he's definitely playing well above his head, but this year, but he's getting so many great opportunities within the scheme, and kudos to Buffalo. I mean, they're just keeping their opponents guessing. I love the fact that Pete Carroll almost blamed them for the loss because they didn't play the way that they expected
them
to.
That was unfair. There was a quota of rushing attempts that they, that
why,
they
why didn't
hit.
You do more of the crappy things you don't do well? But yeah, no, I think that you know, that certainly has something to do with it. But again, I mean, he's having a great year, you know, and I think that he does certain things well, but that offense just opens up so much, and to the point where I'm, you know, I mean, I don't know if you're a full-on Brian Daboll stan like I am, but I would love to see what happens next in terms of, you know, I would imagine he gets a job after this year somewhere else, and to see what happens with that quarterback wherever he lands, because I think that there's a correlation there for sure.
Yeah, and you know, it's what Buffalo's doing offensively, Seattle defensively. And again, look, Pete Carroll, I read the quote, and then I saw Pete Carroll delivering the quote, and he was a little bit tongue-in-cheek when he was saying it. But the Seahawks obviously were not prepared for what they got early in this game. You know, I don't know if they thought they'd maybe generate a little bit more with the four-man pass rush with Carlos Dunlap in there. And Carlos Dunlap did make a couple plays in this game, but they ended up having to blitz, and they had to blitz heavily. And I think that's what you're going to see from this defense this year. There's just not enough of a pass rush, and they just don't I don't know if Quentin Dunbar is hurting. I know he has some knee problems that have sort of lingered. He couldn't cover. There's no Shaq Griffin. So, I mean, they had all sorts of issues with the pass defense, and they really ramped up the blitzing, and eventually it just burned them in the end. It's sort of when they flipped the switch, they had some success, but it just didn't last long enough to actually have any sort of, I don't know, sustained long-term success in this game.
I was expecting Jamal Adams to bring so much more to the table here, and Quentin Dunbar is obviously a big disappointment. That was a guy that I thought was really going to complete the secondary, but I just think that Seattle as a whole kind of hasn't evolved the way that you've seen some of these other cover three offshoots evolve around the league, right? I mean, we saw what Robert Saleh did in San Francisco, and you know, you take that skeleton of that defense, and then you get creative with it, because you know, Seattle, the way that they played that defense changed the NFL. Every team adopted a version of that defense. And then what did people spend the next 5 years doing? Finding all the plays that beat it with regularity. And I think that the problem is we haven't seen Seattle come far enough away from, you know, sort of that original recipe, you know. And I think that that's what they need to develop as they go on here. And, you know, not that Pete Carroll would take cues from some of his apprentices here, but I think it would help to kind of look around and see, okay, what did some of these other guys do? And you know, what they need, again, is a pass rush, right? They need somebody to get after the quarterback and kind of shake some of this stuff loose, but they don't have enough of a presence there.
No, and you're absolutely right. And look, they are limited by the fact that they're just not very good on the front four, and they're just not great at cornerback right now. And they might not be great at cornerback, but we'll have to see what Dunbar is. Like I said, it might have been an injury issue in this game. He might have been playing through something. He was not good enough in this one. The one thing I'll say is, like, this is going to sound really dismissive and oversimplified, but you watch these two defense, and they're both flawed defenses in slightly different ways, but the Bills, when they blitzed, it seemed to be a little more thoughtful, whereas when the Seahawks blitzed, it just seemed kind of like an on-tilt, the monster blitz in Madden where you just send everyone.
Engage
like,
eight.
It just seemed like that again and again and again, just calling the same play. And I'm sure there, again, much more thought goes into it by Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr., but it just seemed like they were like, yeah, it was like shrug your shoulders, like, what can we do? Just send everyone again. Whereas with the Bills, it was more like, it was different guys coming. It was a little bit more disguised. It was causing a little more confusion. It was causing Russell Wilson to have to think a little bit more. I think it did cause some hesitation with Josh Allen, but not enough. And Allen can obviously extend some plays. And once they sort of figure out what was going on, it was just not going to work.
His mobility is getting so much better too. And that I think is a major factor here in the way that he's, pushing up into the pocket and just even getting two or three positive yards in situations where I think he would have thrown the ball up in the air before or, made some sort of a super negative play. He's splitting defenders. You know, he's doing all these things really well. And I think that just, again, there's so many more dynamics to Buffalo's offense than there were maybe two or three years ago. And it's forcing defenses to play weird, you know, and to play them honest.
Yeah. And look, Seahawks offense side of the ball. This was, for the second time in 3 weeks, we saw a defense frazzle Russ. And I think it's a tough blueprint to follow because, again, like I said, I think Vance Joseph in that Sunday night game 2 weeks ago and Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott in this one, I think it was more a matter of pressing the right buttons, getting the right blitz, with the right look at the right time, as opposed to just we're just going to blitz him a ton and cross our fingers and hope it works. It's a very thoughtful approach that they've taken with the blitz in these games, and it got to him for a second time, and we'll see if it is replicable going forward. I don't really know if that's the case, but I mean, Bills defense that has had a lot of issues this year, they won this battle, which I think a lot of us just did not anticipate coming.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a team that I would not want to face in the playoffs, right? You know, if we were living in an alternate world where we had MLB rules where you were allowed to pick your... Did they end up doing that, baseball, where you got to pick your opponent? Was that a or was that just discussed?
They didn't. I don't think they did.
Cowards.
We gotta bring Verducci onto the podcast now, I guess, but...
Cowards.
I don't think that once the Orioles were out of it, you and I just stopped paying attention. But it was also, and look, I usually watch the baseball playoffs. It was so, I don't know, what's the word? It was just so difficult to follow and figure out who was, like, who had earned what spot. And I didn't really follow the early rounds. I watched the World Series. That was about it.
I don't think I watched anything. Like you said, once the Orioles are out, which typically happens within the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, there's really not a whole lot. There's really not a whole lot to do. But I thought, I thought I read something that at some point they're going to make the best team pick their wild card opponent. And if that ever happened in the NFL, I would love that. It would be completely amazing. But I would not pick the Bills. Would be one of the last teams I would pick because there's just so many things that they do good enough. You know what I mean? Like they're just so overwhelmingly balanced, and I think that that's gonna hurt, and that's gonna be a really difficult thing for teams to contend with.
The content that would generate, it would sustain us for so
forever.
Long.
Think of
all
the
right,
clicks.
Let's go down to Dallas for what was nearly. I mean, this would have been one of just the all-time upsets here. The Cowboys getting more than two touchdowns in this one, and this was an absolute. This is an absolute battle. Steelers offense. I mean, let's talk about it a little bit. The downfield passing game is just not quite there, and I don't think it's a matter of they're not doing it enough. They're missing the shots. They're missing them by not a whole lot. I think if you're a Steelers fan, I mean, look, you already feel great because your team's 8-0 right now, but I think if you're a Steelers fan, you can be a little bit cautiously optimistic that that stuff will click in the second half of the season because it seems like it's almost there, but it's not there right now.
It's a rule if you're a Steelers fan during your best seasons that you have to have a deep threat who only catches one out of every five, you know, wide open shots. That's a rule that came from Sammy Coates' law of physics. But yeah, Chase Claypool dropped one on Sunday, and that I think was just out of the grasp of his fingertips. But I think a lot of this is Big Ben rounding back into shape. I mean, and he's still hobbling a little bit. We saw him miss a few snaps on Sunday as well, which sort of, you know, brought tension back to the ultimate fragility of him and the fact that this team is one rolled ankle away from, like, you know, being 8-8. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is, you know, they really, you know, I as surprised as I am about a lot of things, the fact that they still have not invested in a quality backup quarterback is stunning to me. I think that Pittsburgh is good enough offensively, and they just haven't needed to press that pedal. At least, and who knows when they're going to be challenged enough to do so, you know, and who knows when they're going to face a quarterback as good as Garrett Gilbert again.
Yeah, I was going to say, Garrett Gilbert, this was not Ben DiNucci. This was not the sort of sandlot plays that they sort of drew up for Ben DiNucci and sort of just prayed that something would work. Garrett Gilbert, you could see some semblance of, like, sustainable offense. And again, the Steelers' defense is dominant, so you're going to be limited against them anyway. But they had some good general ideas. They spread them out. They got a couple of good mismatches with those three receivers on the field. There were a couple of times where, you know, it's zone coverage and you end up getting CeeDee Lamb isolated on a linebacker, and like that stuff works, and you can look at that and say, like, okay, this was a good plan that got executed, and look at that, we got 8 yards on this first down throw, and things are feeling a little bit good here. So definitely it was a step forward for this Cowboys offense that I don't think we anticipated they would take, and I think it was a little bit of a reminder, and I know Cowboys fans don't want to hear it right now, it's a little bit of a reminder that, like, Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy kind of know what they're doing for the most part, I think.
I'll say this. back when I was covering the launch of the Alliance of American Football, I was talking to then the league's director of player personnel, Heinz Ward, and I said, who is the one guy that in 5 years is going to be an everyday NFL player that we're going to be talking about with regularity that came from the Alliance of American Football? And without hesitation, he said, Garrett Gilbert, that's the guy. This is the one that's going to graduate from the Alliance of American Football and become the NFL player that's going to carry the banner for us. So kudos to Heinz Ward. I think he saw it coming all the way back when he was running that offense for Steve Spurrier and the Apollos down in Orlando.
The Apollos, the de facto AAF champion, Orlando Apollos.
Can't take that away from him. Cannot take that away.
Garrett Gilbert was also, I mean, look, when I think of Garrett Gilbert, I still think of him coming in for Colt McCoy in relief in the national title game and sort of keeping Texas in there with sort of a juggernaut Alabama team. So maybe this is just what he does. For one game every decade, he comes in and pulls off a near upset, and that's how it goes. But they would have finished this upset if not for the turnovers. CeeDee Lamb had a fumble that led to a Steelers field goal at the end of the first half, and then Gilbert threw he got hit as he threw on a third and goal interception in the end zone, and that did it. And Minkah Fitzpatrick is just everywhere you want him to be at the exact right moment. There's something to be said for the Steelers being able to force those turnovers, but this one was... Ooh, this was, Steelers were sweating one out that I don't think anyone thought they would possibly have to sweat out.
If their first loss was to the Cowboys, that would have just been completely ridiculous. I would have loved that. That would have been great.
It would have been completely chaotic. But yeah, instead they're sitting at 8-0, and then look, everyone gets to argue now if the Steelers are really a good 8-0 team. But they're good enough to be 8-0. All right, Connor, go away for a few minutes because it is time for the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. As always, every Monday, we are joined by Michael Fabiano of SI.com/fantasy and the SI Fantasy Podcast. Again, only comes here once a week. You can get them every day at those places. Fabs, we'll do the early waiver wire as we always do. And I know running backs aren't as robust as maybe some of the other spots. We got a lot of guys to go through, but let's start at running back because running backs are kings here.
Yeah, and this is probably the thinnest position from a waiver wire perspective. Christian McCaffrey injured his shoulder, folks, so Mike Davis is probably not available in most leagues, but if somebody in your league dropped him, go get him because it looks like he's going to be the guy here for at least maybe a week or so. But Duke Johnson's probably going to end up being the top running back ad this week. David Johnson suffered a concussion against the Jaguars, didn't return to the game. So if he can't get through protocol in time, it would be Duke who's got a revenge game against the Browns. Are we still talking about revenge games after last week? I mean, it's still fun, right? So, we missed the ever-elusive Amir Abdullah revenge game. He got into the end zone for the Vikings. We stink, man. All right, anyways, so Duke Johnson is worth a look. If Devonta Freeman can't come back, Wayne Gallman has scored a touchdown in three straight games. Now, he's losing snaps and touches to Alfred Morris, of all people, but Gallman's still been pretty good. Gus Edwards, we don't talk about him as much because we all have this like love for J.K. Dobbins. Mm-hmm. But Edwards is getting goal line opportunities, and he's still getting enough looks as a runner to be valuable and maybe more valuable than Dobbins. And they've got New England, and their run defense is awful. So Gus Edwards also worth a look. I can't believe I'm going to say this name, but I have to because I got to cover all of my bases. Caleb Ballage.
Yeah.
Like, I love. So Justin Jackson, that was bad. He was a top like 12 running back for me in week 9. And he barely played because he got hurt. And that's been his problem. He gets hurt. So instead of going to Joshua Kelly, the Chargers went to Caleb Ballage. He had 17 touches, 84 yards, and a touchdown against the Raiders. And guess what? If Justin Jackson can't play in week 10, guess who Ballage faces? The Dolphins! Revenge game!
Oh, man.
Yeah, so Kalen Ballage will be worth a look. Crazy, man. If Zach Moss is available, pick him up. In competitive leagues, he's not. And then DJ Dallas could still be out there, but if Chris Carson and or Carlos Hyde comes back, he'll move to the end of the line. And also, we saw more of Travis Homer against Buffalo. Yeah. But I would still say DJ Dallas is worth an ad if you're desperate for a running back. But I don't know how much longer he's going to have at the top of that depth chart.
Ah, well, the days it's gross of DJ
out
Dallas.
There, dude. Yeah. I mean, like, I could talk about Jordan Howard, but I don't want to because he fell into the end zone. So at least he got you a touchdown. But yeah. I mean, that backfield's a mess. I guess if Matt Breida comes back and you could pick him up, then he'd be worth a look.
Fingers crossed for Breida here. Yeah. Well, let's go to the good news, though. We got lots of other guys out here. Let's go receivers here.
Lots of them. So Curtis Samuel, who I talked about last week, still not owned in enough leagues, played 60 snaps, had 12 touches, almost 27 fantasy points against the Chiefs. He's given you 17-plus in three straight games. He's been better than Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore over that time. DJ Moore has disappeared, man. Yeah. Buccaneers coming up next for Samuel. The Broncos have two wide receivers that you can target. KJ Hamler, who's had 13 targets and over 25 fantasy points in his last two games combined. And then Tim Patrick, who had 9 targets, a touchdown, and almost 13 points against Atlanta. And Patrick has now scored 12-plus fantasy points in 4 of 5. And they've got the Raiders coming up. Some other guys. Christian Kirk, probably gone. Just check. John Brown, probably gone. Just check. Danny Amendola, 10 targets without Kenny Galladay. Nelson Aguilar, a touchdown in 3 of his last 4 games. I get it. It's Nelson Aguilar. I don't care. He's scoring. Michael Pittman Jr. led the Colts wide receivers in targets. Alan Lazard could be back this week. He's getting close. And they've got Jacksonville coming up next. And if Lazard can't go, Marquez Valdez-Scantling is interesting because of the matchup. And he had 2 touchdowns last week, only 4 targets, but he made them count.
All right. How about this tight end scene?
Yeah, this scene is gross, bro. So Irv Smith Jr. had 4 targets but 2 touchdowns. And he has scored 10-plus points in 3 of his last 4 games. So he's worth a look. But I looked at ownership percentage on ESPN, right? Dallas Goedert is available in 60% of leagues. Guys, he's got to be 100% owned. Austin Hooper is 40% owned on ESPN. If he comes back from the appendectomy this week, he's got to be owned across the board. That position is garbage. And he had 10-plus points in 3 straight games, and there's no OBJ in Cleveland. And then Jordan Reed. Yes, that Jordan Reed. George Kittle continues to be out. I know he didn't do much last week, but he's still going to be worth a look off the wire. Tight end is gross right now. It's disgusting. It's horrible. If you get 9 points from a tight end, you're basically dancing in the streets. So there's not much out there. So if any of those guys are available, go get them.
Quarterbacks?
There's a lot. Tua, Tagovailoa. Yeah. Holy God in heaven, was that a great performance. Mm-hmm. And the performance against the Rams last week, I think, spooked some people because he only had 93 yards. He didn't do anything. And we're like, oh, I miss Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yeah? 20 of 28, 248, 2 touchdowns, almost 22 fantasy points against the Cardinals, whose defense is not that good, folks. They just played a lot of crappy teams. The teams that are good have gone over 30 against them. And in week 10, it's Tua against Herbert, right? The Dolphins could have drafted Herbert, right? They took Tua. So, like, that's going to be a lot of fun. Teddy Bridgewater, 310 yards. I was wrong about Bridgewater. The Chiefs have actually been pretty tough against quarterbacks. This one turned into a barn burner. I had almost 30 fantasy points, 19-plus points in 4 of his last 6. He's got the Bucs coming up, though. Maybe that's a good matchup. I don't know. What the hell happened to Tampa Bay? Oh, my God. Like, honestly, I thought outside of the backfield because, you know, that backfield is a disaster. You can't figure out who's going to get the ball. Legit, I start Mike Evans, start Chris Godwin, start Antonio Brown, start Robert Gronkowski. They all stunk. Brady looked like a 43-year-old quarterback in that game.
Something about the Saints. The Saints defense, like, gets up only for the Bucs.
And I have done – listen – 3 straight weeks now, and I'm not the only one, but I'll take my medicine. 3 straight weeks I've said Drew Brees is not a good start. And Drew Brees has kicked me in the onions 3 straight weeks. I'm done. Just start him. I'm not talking about Drew Brees anymore. You know what's going to happen? I'm going to say, start him! And he's going to suck because fantasy football. We got a bunch of other quarterbacks that you can pick up. Derek Carr, okay? Didn't have a great game against the Chargers. I get it. But he's got Denver coming up next week. Denver's defense is bad against the pass. Speaking of Denver, Drew Lock told you to pick him up last week. 19-plus points in 2 straight games. Had nearly 30 against Atlanta. Their defense is awful. And Locke's got the Raiders. Nick Foles. Okay, I get it. He played like beep. He did against Tennessee. It's called garbage time, folks. He had almost 22 fantasy points. And the Vikings are up next, and their defense isn't any good. So, like, if you're desperate, okay, don't come out and say, well, you know, Nick Foles is a must start. He's not. But he's worth an ad if you need help at the position. Alex Smith, God bless him, okay? Kyle Allen's done for the season. And Alex Smith came in, and he wasn't great, but look at the schedule. Detroit, Bengals, Cowboys next three weeks. I mean, pretty it's nice. Pretty good. Yeah. And then, now this one here. Jake, you ready? Luton.
All right. Jake, I'm listening.
21 and a half fantasy points. His second pass was like a bomb touchdown to DJ Chark. Couldn't believe it. So, I mean, like, maybe he's a 2QB super flex league quarterback, but have you ever seen, and I can't remember seeing this many really good rookie quarterback performances in the same season. Honestly, like, you know, I know there's been some, right? You know, RG3, Vince Young, there's been some very good rookie quarterback performances, but Burrow's been good. Herbert's been bananas good. Mm-hmm. Tua was great. And then Jake Luton, for crying out loud. Boy, I tell you, maybe no preseason is the way to go for some of these rookie quarterbacks. I was going to say,
whole thing got flipped on his head. It's supposed to be with no preseason. Defense is ahead of offense. Young quarterbacks are going to struggle. And no, it's been the complete opposite this year.
Yeah, it's been crazy. So that's it. There are some good quarterbacks that, good quarterback options, I guess. But two is the number one. He looked really good. I mean, I was wrong. I was like mad that they got rid of Fitzpatrick there as the starter because, you know, in a 2QB league, I have him and Fitz was dealing. So I was kind of being selfish there. But after last week, I'm like, ooh, what was that? Like, nobody did anything on that offense. You know, I mean, it was pretty bad in the passing game. Whew, he looked good, man. I mean, 20 to 28. This kid's got something there. And boy, I tell you, the quarterback position looks really good for the future of the NFL. Well, I mean, unless what's wrong with Lamar Jackson? Why does he stink now? Do you remember when it was fun to have Lamar Jackson on your fantasy football team? Because he stinks right now. And I'm saying stinks. I don't want 18 points a game from Lamar Jackson. I want 24.
Yeah.
And he has not been good. Not at all.
He showed up in the third quarter. It took him a while. He took the first half off. But
it's brutal, bro.
They got work to do. They
brutal,
got work
man.
To do. That's all you can say about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Fabs, doing God's work on this show every Monday, but all week, si.com/fantasy, SI Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe to it if you don't already. We always appreciate it.
You got it, my brother.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my, look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously.
It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
All right, Connor, come on back in here. And I know you have very much been wanting to highlight this Kyler-Tua matchup, what ended up being a great game in Arizona, and really just fantastic performance by both young quarterbacks.
Yeah, Kyler Murray with the first ever double-triple in NFL history. And then Tua, this is what we were kind of hoping for to see last week against the Rams. And I'm happy that it happened in this sort of game, in this sort of environment where you got to see both of these guys go back and forth. They kind of trade big throws. You know, neither of them were afraid to take chances. I think Kyler, you know, that touchdown to Christian Kirk was like 60 yards in the air and a complete dime. And it was just beautiful football. And I think that if you take it in the very long view, and we'll go back to the actual matchup in the game in a second, but I think if you take the broad view of it, these guys are just the tail of the under 25 quarterback class in the NFL right now that is superb. I mean, to the point where, you know, yes, it was great. You know, Brady and Manning was good, and when Aaron Rodgers came around and Favre, but like we might have a more complete set of really good game-breaking quarterbacks than we've ever had in the NFL right now. Like, think about it. Like, 8 or 9 teams have like excellent young quarterbacks who can play. They can play on the ground. They're mobile. They can throw as good as any of these other guys from the 80s, 90s, whatever. And it's incredible football. You know, it's just fun. And I think that if you were looking at the schedule back in May and you saw Cardinals Dolphins, you know, in the middle of November, you would have been like, all right, there's no way I'd be paying attention to this game at all. But instead, it was one of the best games we probably had all year.
Yeah, and look, the two things I'll say about Tua in this game that were so encouraging after what was, again, people were right to be underwhelmed last week with the Rams' performance, but that's fine. One was the way he handled the blitz. The Cardinals did come after him. That's how the Cardinals are going to have to come after quarterbacks going forward. And also, I mean, look, I don't think the guy's, you know, Tom Brady here, but I wasn't sure how his escapability would translate to the NFL. I didn't know if he'd be sort of, you know, he's not a Kyler level athlete. Obviously, he's not a top level athlete. He's probably middle of the pack, but he's crafty, and you sort of saw that. He had two scrambles, two key scrambles in the second half, where he sort of, you know, he just sort of moved through creases and ended up squirting out and picking up chunks of yardage, and the whole thing. If it adds up this way, I mean, they're going to be totally fine with him going forward. And the question will be, what is ultimately his ceiling? But when you have this kind of defense that they have in Miami and a quarterback who can do the kind of things that Tua showed he was capable of doing in this game, I mean, that's a complete team all of a sudden in Miami.
Yeah, only two quarterbacks on Sunday threw into more tight windows than Tua did. Ryan Tannehill and Derek Carr. 14.7 over expected completion percentage for Tua. Like, this is really good stuff. You know what I mean? This is really great stuff. And I'm glad you brought up the scramble, because, you know, there was such a natural smoothness to that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he looked like a kick returner in the open field. Like, that's how you dismiss defenders. And to be able to stress that, you know, we went over overboard in complimenting him last week for not relying on that. But now that this is a different game, you know, your defense isn't spotting you 21 points. You know, this is going to be part of your strength moving forward. I think he put a lot on film that defenses are now going to be a little bit overly cautious about moving forward.
And as far as Kyler's performance goes, I'm going to say something that sounds like a backhanded compliment, even though it is not. But I'll get to the good first. Much better at the intermediate and deep intermediate levels in this game. I mean, that has been his issue, you know, over the first season and a half of his career here. But this Dolphins defense is, I don't know, maybe I'm just saying something that people already know, but it's a really good defense, and it's a really, really good pass defense. They have some issues against the run, but this is an excellent pass defense, and for Kyler to step up and perform in this game like he did was extremely impressive. It also was like, I was looking at the numbers, you know, the Dolphins have faced, they faced Josh Allen, they face Russell Wilson. They face some guys who can run around and make plays out of structure, and they haven't let anyone do that. Russell had like 4 rushing yards against them. I think Josh Allen had like 18 or something like that. No one's really burned them like that. But you saw Kyler. I mean, Kyler did the same thing he's done to everyone this year, and his legs are a weapon that they just were not last season. And I think it's kind of like what you said about Tua being able to, you know, it's that that smoothness, that ability to sort of, you know, understand where the bodies are going to when you are on those scrambles. And I think Kyler has just come such a long way this year as compared to last year, where I thought he was just, I thought Kyler, when he scrambled a lot last year, was just trying to sort of run basically around the edge and just turn the edge and do it that way. And he learned quickly that there are a lot of guys who are just as fast as you in the NFL, and you can't necessarily just outrun them.
He's so deadly, and he's so intentional with those movements, you know, and it's almost like, this is going to be a horrible analogy, but do you know when you program, do you have a Roomba in your house?
Like, I don't.
A robot vacuum?
I don't, but maybe for the sake of this anecdote, I'll pretend I do.
So you know the robot vacuum that you definitely have?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
It's running right now. It's looking for centipedes on the floor.
On the you know, on your phone, you can tell it exactly where to go, and it figures out like the shortest distance between like a straight line, and it cleans like in that line, and it like cuts down any extraneous movements and just goes from point A to point B in extremely fast manner. And it's like, that's him. It's just like he sees it, he takes off, he doesn't put himself in any danger, which I think is significant, right? Like there's no there, you know, he's so smart to, he slides right away, doesn't get himself hurt, and you know, all that stuff just adds into such a difficulty. Like I bring this up a lot, but you know, the way that Alex Smith used to do things when he was at Utah and when he was at San Francisco, but this is like that in hyperdrive, right? It's like these intentional little scrambles that just keep the defense annoyed enough where they have to do the things that they don't want to do against you, you know. And he's just, Kyler's next level smart, and I think that he just knows how to move those chess pieces around, regardless of how good all the other talent is that's facing him.
I do want to mention 2 other things from this game, and I guess this was like my favorite game of the day. Xavien Howard, who has been great all year for Miami, and a lot of people will look at this game. He was primarily matched up with DeAndre Hopkins. Didn't necessarily follow him, but it was mostly Howard versus Hopkins in this one. He won this matchup, and I think he won it fairly handily. And a lot of people will point to the fact that he ended up getting flagged like 4 times for pass interference. 3 of them were just, I mean, they were unforgivable flags to throw. I cannot believe they got thrown. DeAndre Hopkins is very difficult to officiate because he almost seeks out contact when he's going downfield. But Xavien Howard got the wrong officiating crew in this one. He got some flag happy refs just flagging him for stuff that wasn't penalties, but overall, he was excellent in this game, and he really did win this matchup. And like I said, you got Byron Jones on the other side. I mean, this pass defense is emerging as one of the best in the NFL, which I guess makes it even more impressive that Kyler did what he did to them. But the Cardinals did get a little bit of help from some dicey officiating at times in this one. And the other thing is, look, Cliff Kingsbury trying to kick that 49-yard field goal when your offense is, it's 4th and short, it's 4th and 1, like, just, even if you make the field goal, you're about to give it back to Tua. You can't trust your defense at this point. You are probably going to lose that game regardless. Just go score the touchdown. Go win the game. You have this offense. This is the strength of your team. Let the strength of your team carry you to the victory.
I wish that Air Raid had the character tendency to be like next gen in terms of like, I'm always going to go for it on fourth down and I'm never going to kick field goals, you know, but he is like sort of a conventional, like he is fairly conventional in his decision making, which is a bit of a bummer, but I think he'll grow into that maybe, you know, like Mike Tomlin did, where you hope that if he gets those signature wins and he kind of builds a little bit of that security, then he can really sort of, you know, let the freak flag fly, you know what I mean? And really start doing some stuff that, you know, other coaches wouldn't do on fourth down.
It was a day of surprises, though. I have to say the biggest surprise was that kick came up short, because when you're watching a field goal for 49 yards, once you see it flying straight, it's I have my three screens up and like, it's like the kick was off, it's going right down the middle. And it was like, all right, it's good. And I'm looking somewhere else. And I just hear the announcers yell, "It's short." I was like, "What? Which TV is this coming from?"
Yeah,
there you go.
That was something.
That's how it ends. All right, let's go Ravens Colts here. Where look, I don't know what Ravens fans think of their team right now. I know it's been something of a disappointment to see them not dominate the way they did in the second half of last season, but the defense has been great. And what you saw in the second half of this game in Indianapolis, and the Colts are a quality opponent. They are, you know, Indy had a lead at this point. The Ravens dominated both sides of the ball. They would have scored three touchdowns in the third quarter if not for a Gus Edwards fumble on first and goal. Lamar was excellent. He was efficient throwing the ball. He made plays with his legs. I just think if you watched the second half of this game, you would just sort of shrug your shoulders and say, all right, the Ravens are going to be there. They're going to be right there with the Chiefs and the Steelers, and if you want to put the Bills up there, when it's all said and done in the AFC.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the part of this, too, is that when we see someone like Lamar Jackson do what he did the year before, our expectation is that that only gets better and more spectacular, when in reality, you know, he probably spends the next two or three seasons, you know, getting better at the other things that teams are now forcing him to do because they're not allowing him to do the things that he does the best. And, you know, to your point, you know, that you made about Kyler earlier, you know, the middle of the field, you know, he's still, you know, only missed, I think, three of his mid-range throws in that 10 to 20 yard range, and you know, he's just doing the things that he needs to do to move the ball, and he's still adding that effective rushing element. But yeah, I mean, I think that the you know, the Ravens are going to be there. I think that they've lacked that, whatever it is. I mean, they creamed the Browns in week one, but to lose the way that they did a couple times this year to the best of their opponents, kind of the top-notch guys, you know, that's sort of the thing that maybe leaves a little bit of a lingering doubt there. But, you know, there was nothing in this game against a very good Colts defense outside of maybe the fact that they're still struggling to run the ball a little bit effectively. But, you know, it's, you still have Lamar Jackson, and I think you still have a really good defense.
Yeah, and I still say the Colts are a very good team. I think they're right there on the second tier in the AFC, and this was a quality win for the Ravens. One other note I just want to throw out in this game, Jonathan Taylor had a costly fumble that turned into a scoop and score touchdown, and when it happened, I was like, oh, Jonathan Taylor fumbling again. I mean, that was the knock on him coming to the league. That was actually his first fumble of the year. So, you know, that's a tough break, but I was almost like, wow, good for Jonathan Taylor. That's what his issue was supposed to be, and it didn't pop up until Sunday.
You're acting like all the scouts that got fired in Moneyball. Shame on you. Don't be presumptuous, Gary. He can do it.
Let's go Chiefs-Panthers here. I thought this game was great. I thought the Panthers absolutely threw their best punch in a number of ways. We've said all year about how the Panthers are undermanned, and you know, this coaching staff is getting as much out of them as they possibly could. And they took them to Kansas City, and they almost pulled this one out. But Patrick Mahomes is kind of rounding into MVP form at this point, and I think this is trouble for the rest of the NFL at this point.
All I want to talk about is the 67-yard field goal attempt. It was the greatest part of my Sunday. And to be honest, I thought it was a, you know, I got plowed for saying this, but I thought it was a great idea. Like, you know, I think teams should do more of that. Like, you see all these kickers pregame, like, goofing around and trying to drill 70-yarders. And maybe I'm spoiled because I used to work for the NFL, and I had the difficult assignment of covering the last Pro Bowl in Honolulu one year. So I was down in Hawaii. I promise the story has a point, but, you know, I was down there with the social media team. So we were hanging out with Marquette King, who came down there to be like our social person for the weekend. But we had Justin Tucker down there, and they were goofing around and doing trick shots. And like, you know, I just watched him on a field on the side of the practice thing, just, you know, taking whacks at 70-yard field goals. I mean, this is what these guys do when, you know, they're not doing their 1,000 kicks that they're supposed to do and all their kind of golf-style practices. They mess around and, you know, why? You know, let's just try it, you know? Like, give me the 70-yard kicker guy. He's out there. That person exists.
Absolutely. I'm absolutely on board. And unless I saw it incorrectly, it had the distance. It wasn't close to going in. It was way wide right.
He had the leg, yeah.
And this was, I don't know, this, I guess this is how every Panthers loss will end, with Joey Sly missing a 60-something yarder. But, I mean, that's the thing. So, you know, obviously, and the win probabilities go out the window, because you've just never seen anyone make a 67-yarder. So I don't know how you calculate that. But it seems like you have a better chance of making a 67-yarder
than completing a Hail Mary, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Or coming up with, and not to pick on Teddy Bridgewater, but we've seen Teddy Bridgewater come up short on some of these Hail Marys over the years. So, you know, the other option is, are you going to do a bunch of lateral stuff and try and score that way? Which, again, probably less likely than making a 67-yarder.
Less likely. I mean, the Panthers are probably one of five or six teams that have the weird sort of ranginess of skill position talent that they could probably pull off the lateral. You know, I mean, Curtis Samuel and Christian McCaffrey and a lot of those guys are probably talented and athletic enough to do that. That said, I mean, I would love to hear the science on this, or, you know, I would love to hear, you know, someone actually say that without any sample size, because we don't know how these guys can do this with any regularity, you know, what would be the call on that. But I'm not sure if back when we did Bad Football Movies, did you watch Gus with us?
Oh, yeah.
The field goal kicking mule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is basically where Matt Rhule is getting his game plan from. Like, Gus was drilling. For those of you guys who don't know, Gus is a mule from Yugoslavia that could kick field goals the length of the football field, and obviously turned around a woebegone NFL franchise facing extinction or sale or whatever it was. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is the next thing, the next evolution. Give me the 70-yard kicker guy. I love this. Like, it's just, it's very exciting to me.
No, that was me, you, and Bent Marston on the Gus podcast. Oh. I listened to it again last summer because it was a legitimately good time watching that movie, talking about it.
On a non-serious field goal kicker note, though, I think that a lot of fan bases are going to be surprised when the bad fan bases are going to be surprised when the first coach that their team interviews for a head coaching job is going to be Joe Brady. Like, that guy is not going to be with the Panthers next year. I would be stunned. I think that would be a missed opportunity. This guy is a star. And I think that, you know, you're seeing that even in the worst moments for Carolina, you're seeing the makings of the next great offensive head coach.
He had a Panthers are going to have to like move on from Matt Rhule in order to keep Joe Brady this offseason. he had, and you know, a guy is good. And look, Teddy Bridgewater is he's a limited quarterback. You're a little bit limited with what you can do with him. He has absolutely gotten the best out of Teddy Bridgewater. He has an aggressive version of Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, look, Christian McCaffrey was back in this game, and sadly the news on Monday morning was that Christian McCaffrey has now injured his shoulder and might miss some time going forward. But what they did to the Chiefs on the opening drive of this game, a 15-play touchdown drive to open things up, and that in and of itself is impressive, but it was one of those drives where you had the Chiefs defenders like constantly like pointing at each other, yelling at each other, because it's just it's they're just being out schemed. I mean, that's all you can say about it. And you are absolutely right. I mean, it's it's cliche at this point to say like, oh yeah, the young offensive coach is going to get hired somewhere. But yeah, this is going to be deserved, and he's going to get hired somewhere.
Is totally different. This guy didn't come from, you know, this isn't another McVay assistant. This isn't another Kyle Shanahan assistant. This is like a guy who 5 years ago was a grad assistant at Penn State, you know, and, yeah. You know, did have his time there with Sean Payton, but completely revamped LSU's passing game with Joe Burrow. And now is doing the same thing with Teddy Bridgewater. So I'm very excited to hopefully watch him coach Trevor Lawrence and with the Jets next year.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Do it. Don't do it, Joe Brady. Go anywhere else. Like, don't take the Jets job.
No, go coach Trevor Lawrence. Absolutely go coach Trevor Lawrence wherever he ends up. Raiders in charge. Raiders keep on, look, they are walking a tightrope. I don't know how good I think this team is, but right now they're sitting at, 5-3 at this point? They are obviously the second best team in the AFC West. And, look, they get outgained by 120 yards. I think you mentioned earlier, I mean, Derek Carr didn't complete a ton of passes, didn't attempt a ton of passes, but his completions were all just, there's just a level of difficulty to everything the Raiders are doing, but they're accomplishing it all. And I guess there's something you said for that too.
John Gruden is fantastic at making easy things harder than they need to be. You know, that's always been sort of his deal as an offensive coordinator, you know, as an offensive guy. If you talk to Jeff Garcia or Chris Sims or any of the quarterbacks that he's had before that, there was always this sense that, like, this guy is brilliant. Why can't he just, like, take what's in his head and put it onto the field in a way that makes sense for everybody? But it does. It looks choppy. It doesn't look like it's all going in the right direction at once, which is weird. Because there's been games, you know, I wrote this 3 or 4 weeks ago, where you could see all the Gruden visions coming to life, and he calls some brilliant plays. He's doing some things I think that teams are starting to copy. Like, he's at that level. But then there are games like this where everything just looks so forced and unable to be, you know, fluid. And I don't know what to call that, but, you know, they are the most maddening team in the NFL right now to try to predict, because they're talented, they're good, they're theoretically well coached, but there's just some sort of ingredient missing there.
And yet they're still winning. I mean, that's what makes it even more confusing. If they were sitting here at 2-6, you'd be like, so this kind of adds up. It doesn't quite add up, but it's not like the Bears where it is not adding up in an almost comical way. I mean, look, we'll probably have a chance to talk about Justin Herbert and near misses with the Chargers all season here. It's insane that he has lost 6 of his 7 starts at this point, because they have not only has he played spectacularly, they've been in position to win every one of those games, except for maybe the Panthers loss, and they just keep on figuring out a way. And I do want to mention Isaiah Johnson, who's, you know, he's 6'2" sub package corner for the Raiders. He got targeted on the two goal line throws in this game that the Chargers had to win it. It was to 6'4" Mike Williams. He got his hand in enough to break it up. Johnson did, and then to 6'8" Donald Parham, and Johnson broke up another one, which is that's impressive. Good for Isaiah Johnson.
Got to shut down Parham. We all
I think I'm about to date myself with this reference, but do you remember a guy named Butch Roll?
No.
Butch Roll was a tight end primarily for the Bills. That's why he sticks out in my mind so much, but. All he did was, and you know, the old Buddy Ryan quote about Chris Carter, all he does is catch his touchdowns. Like, that was like literally what Butch Roll did for a while. He had this is a 3-year span where he had 5 catches and 5 touchdowns between 1987 and 1989 for the Bills. He ruined it. He had a late career resurgence with the Phoenix Cardinals, where he had like 13 catches in a season and no touchdowns.
Ooh.
And ruined the whole ratio. But his Bills career was, let me add this up real quick because the numbers are so small, but 15 catches in 6 seasons with the Bills, and he had 10 touchdowns.
That's amazing.
He's awesome. Butch Roll. let's go Titans Bears here. And we said the Bears don't really add up, and now they've lost 3 straight. Let's start this by getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. They've lost three straight, so they're sitting at 5-4 right now. I will say that looking at their schedule, even if you are sort of down on the Bears and thought they were frauds and stuff like that, they're going to be favored in four of their final seven games here. They can still get to 9 wins and make the playoffs.
That's why you obviously go back to Mitch Trubisky. No, I'm just kidding. But I think that they have the most advantageous part of their schedule left. And even if they are fraudulent, right? And, you know, I think I wrote this earlier in the year that they've been extremely fortunate to be in the position that they are in. They're still playing up to the level of their opponents, right? I mean, they're playing against good football teams and they're playing them tight, which I think is really all you can hope for if you're Matt Nagy without a true answer at quarterback. You know, you have to just hope to remain in these games, have your defense carry you as far as it can go. And they've been doing that, you know, and I think that that's something to be said about the Bears, the fact that they could still chip away at this down the stretch. Now, are they going to be favored against the Vikings down the stretch? I don't know. Since they're playing so well, is that a team that you can't really count on as a win anymore? I don't know. But at the same time, it's going to be interesting. I could see them kind of sneaking into the playoffs again.
I counted them as Vegas favorites at home against the Vikings, at home against the Lions and Texans, and at Jacksonville. That's what I'm counting on there.
That's fair. Yeah. I think that's fair.
They still got to play the Packers twice, though. That's unfortunate. I'll say this: there are no answers coming on offense. I don't know how else to say it. This offensive line is atrocious. There's no run game. It's just not going to work out offensively. The way they can win games is if they start taking the ball away, and they do have the. I mean, look, they have a pass rush. They can create chaos with this defense. They haven't taken it away each of the last 2 weeks. They're 0-3 on the year when they don't take the ball away. And we saw it's the difference between the 2018 Bears and the 2019 Bears was takeaways. The 2018 team led the league, and the 2019 team fell down into like the bottom third of the league in takeaways. And that's what it's going to come down to. And there's a certain amount of luck baked into taking the ball away. And that's what makes it really difficult to look at this team and try and figure out how they're going to win these games. But they're just going to have to hang close and then, steal a possession at some point.
It has been weird to see, you know, and maybe it's because Foles is there, but, you know, trick plays are, it's an unfortunate kind of label on there, but we saw Matt Nagy's sort of creativity compress, I think, over the last 2 years as a play caller rather than expand, which is sort of weird because at this point you would seem like you should be throwing anything you can at the situation, you know, and I would like to see him maybe expand a little bit more in terms of being that creative play caller that a lot of teams feared and didn't know what to expect from, because I do think he's a good coach, and I think this is an okay team that can cause some damage if they're doing things well.
Oh, and this is this is where it goes off the rails, and this is where like respected private citizen Andy Benoit would shout me down for bringing this up. But you somewhat jokingly mentioned putting Trubisky back in the lineup, and Trubisky was out this week with a shoulder injury, so even if it was an option, it wasn't an option. I would just put Trubisky in there and just roll out like a Tim Tebow offense,
and they were doing that a couple of weeks. They did do that like for two or three plays. I think it was last week or the week before. And I, you know, as much as I'll complain about Taysom Hill, you know, it had that flavor to it certainly.
Yeah.
But you could do so much more with Mitch Trubisky than you could with Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill is probably that's the optimistic spin on it. I probably should have said Taysom Hill instead of Tim Tebow. But that's
Tim Tebow offense was bad. I mean, I covered the Tebow cat. That was I was the Jets beat reporter, and I've never seen a more poorly planned offense than that. Tony Sperano, God rest his soul. I mean, that was really bad. So I think Matt Nagy could come up with something a little better than that.
And we should mention the Titans, who won this game and lead the AFC South again. They, you know, this defense have had all these issues on third down. They're making all these moves. Vic Beasley is gone. Desmond King is in. Desmond King, by the way, had a scoop and score touchdown in this. I don't know if that's why they brought him in, but that's
because they knew he was going to do that. Yeah,
exactly. They were like, just stand right here, right now, and just wait for the ball to roll to your feet. Pick it up and run. They have been historically bad on third down. They held the Bears, and again, it's the Bears. They have offensive issues, but they did hold the Bears to 2 for 15 on third down. So it's kind of one of those things where you looked at this defense and said, like, no matter, you know, they were successful in this game, and you look at it and say, well, it was just the Bears, but it's better than getting burned by the Bears, which I think might have happened if they performed like they did the last couple of weeks. And also, A.J. Brown was just unstoppable. A.J. Brown is just, I mean, he is approaching superstar levels here, along with, you know, DK Metcalf rightfully gets all the headlines, but A.J. Brown might be right there with him in that conversation for best receiver in football.
Which is weird that you're not seeing them that emergence be able to get Corey Davis moving more, you know, and to accentuate him a little bit more. You know, as a top 10 pick, you know, there's a lot of promise there too, which I thought, you know, just getting, and he had a couple good games over the last few weeks. But yeah, no, I think this team is doing the right things. I think they're building the right way, and they're going to be another team like the Bills that I do not want to play down the stretch in November and December.
And I will say, just and we won't turn this into Corey Davis podcast here, the one thing I do wonder about Corey Davis, and I think he's a fascinating free agent case coming up this offseason, I think there is, you look at this and say like, oh, A.J. Brown's getting all this attention, shouldn't Corey Davis be putting up numbers across from him? I wonder if the offense is just schemed so well that you can still get A.J. Brown his touches.
That's
and
true.
You almost don't have to go to option two in the offense.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great point.
But let's go to Minnesota. I mean, Dalvin Cook has just completely taken over this season in a way that I didn't think we'd ever really see a running back just dominate an offense like this. He had another 252 yards from scrimmage on 24 touches in this game, and he just has not been tackled the last 2 weeks. And you know, all of us who sort of rolled our eyes a little bit when the Vikings gave him the contract, it's like, well, if you're going to pay a running back, get a running back who performs like this.
And if you're going to pay a running back, make sure you're in the same division as the Detroit Lions, so you can do that twice a year. But no, he was great. And his second burst, we saw that in the long touchdown run that he had in the third or the fourth quarter, I think that was, where, you know, once he gets past that first tackle and he's almost a lock to break that first tackle, his ability to reset and then hit that sprinter speed is incredible. You know, I don't think that there are a lot of backs that have that gear shift ability that Dalvin Cook does. That said, just a punchless performance from Detroit. I mean, there's just nothing that this team can say that they do particularly well. And, you know, I would assume that defending the run would be one of the few things that Matt Patricia could improve right away, regardless of kind of who he had at his disposal. But this is just it's a bad team that doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
They laid down and died as soon as it looked like they maybe might be turning the corner after that Falcons win. And look, Matthew Stafford got absolutely battered in this one. It looks like they are going to, you know, ultimately just waste another year of having Stafford at quarterback. And I don't know. I mean, look, we're all kind of reading the tea leaves on this Kenny Golladay stuff. Kenny Golladay missed this game, by the way, with an injury. But Golladay has sort of been sub-tweeting the Lions a little bit about his contract situation. I don't know how else to say it besides this team is just gaining a reputation of just alienating talented players. Whether it be having to give away Quandre Diggs or Darius Slay, and you could say there were there locker room issues with those guys as far as the coaching staff was concerned, maybe, and maybe that doesn't exist with Golladay, but it just is, they are establishing themselves as such a player unfriendly organization to be a part of, and I don't know how you don't get this sorted out with Kenny Golladay as soon as you possibly can, because Kenny Golladay is absolutely a cornerstone player going forward.
It seems like there's no, like, they forgot that there's a playoff mandate this year, you know, and they're just like, yeah, we're just going to keep building this the Patriot way, and you really don't have any time anymore. I mean, this is, you know, it blows my mind that there are coaches like this who just maybe don't think that the ownership is actually going to go through with it, or, you know, they're trying to, whatever, prepare their resume or something, but the fact that the Lions aren't acting at all like the end is imminent for this you know, current staff is mind blowing to me. And, you know, yeah, I don't know what, you know, are you going to leave with your head held high saying I alienated the five best players in our organization and I did it my way? I mean, no, you would like to still be the head coach of the Lions.
Maybe you thought they meant 2020s, make the playoffs in 2020s. Yeah.
You have 10 more years. Congratulations.
Let's go to Washington, where the Giants won the turnover battle 5-0 in this game, which maybe that was the biggest shock of the week. And they end up having to hang on. I mean, they didn't turn the ball over, but like every issue they have on both sides of the ball kind of reared their ugly head in this one. They can't protect Daniel Jones. When they do and Jones gets an accurate throw away, Evan Engram just figures out a way to put it on the ground somehow. But look, I'm going to save the Daniel Jones conversation for later in the season because I think there's some to get into deeper. I saw more than one Daniel Jones as Jameis Winston tweet, and I just think it's absurd because, yes, turnovers, but the turnovers are coming in much different ways with those two quarterbacks, and one is correctable and one is not. And Daniel Jones's turnover issues are correctable. I don't know if he will correct them, but this was, I guess, the point I'm getting to. In this particular game, Jones was solid. You could argue borderline sharp in this game, and maybe if they don't drop the ball at the rate they do, everything looks a little bit better. But that's where we're at with the Giants.
Yeah. I think that Daniel Jones's mistakes are correctable mistakes, and to the point where I think that if you don't land in the whatever, the Justin Fields territory, then you're going to be fine. And I think he's going to be able to win you, you know, 7 or 8 games in a season moving forward, which in the NFC East is good enough to win the division by 3 games. But this team is doing all the right things. I think it's one of those deals where you know you have the major surgery coming up in the offseason, right? You're going to replace the general manager, or you're going to ask the general manager to retire or step down or whatever you're going to do, and you're going to allow him to align with Joe Judge. All you really wanted to see this year, if you're the ownership of the Giants, is that you have a coach that you can put some long-term faith into, and I think that Joe Judge is a good guy. I think he's going to need to change his offensive coordinator. He's got the right defensive coordinator, and this is a team that plays tough, that seems to like him, and you know, those things are all positives moving forward.
And Kyle Allen suffered a pretty gruesome leg injury in this one, so Washington football team is now Alex Smith's going forward, not Dwayne Haskins. Sounds like Smith is going to be the guy for the rest of the year. And what you saw in this game was it was certainly better than that. The Rams' performance in the rain there. They had something with Cam Sims in sort of a run after catch situation. Smith did find Terry McLaurin for a long touchdown in this one, maybe a little bit misplayed by the defense, but still the kind of stuff you want to see from your quarterback taking that shot when you're playing from behind. Smith ended up turning it over 3 times, threw 3 interceptions. One was his receiver just flat out slipped on a play. But we'll see what this is going forward. I'm just really disappointed they're not giving it back to Dwayne Haskins at this point. I don't think Dwayne Haskins played poorly enough to lose the job, but it's going to be Alex Smith now.
Yeah, everyone's, I hope that he ends up in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan and ends up putting up a butt ton of points. That's sort of like quarterback heaven at this point. But yeah, I never understand what Ron Rivera's ultimate goal is. I mean, he's been bouncing constantly between we want to win right now and we think the division's open, so we're going to make this instead of, well, we need to learn how to win. Well, how about you teach, quote unquote, Zach, Haskins how to win, or Dwayne Haskins how to win, And I think that, we'll see what happens. I had a friend in college named Zach Haskins, so I accidentally just stuck a Zach in there. Dwayne, of course, I know your name is Dwayne, but
maybe your college friend has to learn how to win too. And
yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
2 more to go here. Falcons Broncos is back to back wins for the Falcons. But before you really jump on the bandwagon, they still have to play both their matchups with the Saints and Bucks, so I don't think we're going to get a late season run to the postseason here for Atlanta. I did just want to mention, Drew Lock. We said last week, can you build off of this comeback win against the Chargers? It wasn't beautiful, but you did put up the points you needed to put up, etc. And they just kind of did the same thing again. They did nothing offensively for 40 minutes. They fell back by 3 touchdowns. They rallied against sort of a prevent defense, and it just came up short. I would chalk this up to, on my Drew Lock tote board here. I would mark it as bad. Bad news for Drew Lock in this one.
Yeah, I think that this team if they land in a position, an advantageous position to take a quarterback, they should probably go in that direction and you know, give Vic Fangio the chance to build this moving forward with that young core guy. But I don't know. You know, you really don't know what's going to happen in Denver. I think that there's good pieces there. I think that this is an okay team that should probably, they should essentially be the Raiders, right? I think that they're coached better. I think that there's probably more of a better of a nucleus of kind of core talent there. They should be, I think, where the Raiders are in my mind right now.
And last one of the day, Texans, Jaguars. I don't know if you can really declare a winner in this one aside from Jake Luton. Was the rookie sixth rounder was good. I don't want to say great, that's an overstatement, but he was good in this one. He started with a 73-yard touchdown to DJ Chark, and he ends up, they were down eight, needed a touchdown, got the ball back. He takes them 80 yards in 87 seconds. They missed the two-point conversion. That's why they come up short in this one. But, I mean, I don't know. You might have a long-term backup there in Jacksonville, I think is maybe what you'd say about it. He and Gardner Minshew can battle for that, whoever's going to back up Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence this time next year. But they were in this game, and that's good. And this Texans defense is... I think if I needed to engineer like an 80-yard touchdown drive against any NFL defense, and it was to like the fate of humanity like hung in the balance, but also they let me choose which defense I get to play against, I think I'd take the Texans. I don't think I'd take the Seahawks. I think I'd take the Texans. They've been fundamentally broken defensively for so many years here, and when J.J. Watt is not utterly dominant, they can't stop anyone.
That's a good take. I would probably still go with the Cowboys, You know, there's lots of good choices there. But
yeah, you just don't know what to make of Jacksonville. I mean, they started the season super punchy and exciting, and I think that there is a good, you know, speaking of a good nucleus there, I think that you have like all the things that you need to develop, like. After the fact, like you have a great number two and number three wide receiver, you have a great backup quarterback, you know, you have all these things that are like good to have when you have all the other things that are supposed to be good. And so I don't know, we'll see if they end up landing at the top of the Lawrence sweepstakes, which I think would be pretty good for them.
They're gonna be up there. I don't think anyone's catching the Jets though. I don't think the Jets are winning a game.
Just wait and see. They're gonna beat the Patriots tonight, Gary.
It's, man, what a bummer of a Monday night game to have to watch.
I know. Yeah, I saved the Sunday Times real estate section. I might peruse that. Not that I can afford any of it. I just like how ridiculous it is.
It's good. It's aspirational.
Yeah, so I'll probably do that, and then I'll have the game on in the background, and I'll tune in if it ends up striking my fancy.
No better way to spend your Monday night. All right, Connor, we'll catch you on the Weak Side podcast, and thanks as always. We'll have you for another couple weeks on the show, and then we're gonna change shifts, and Jenny's gonna do it for a while, and we'll go from there.
You're gonna bench me like Gardner Minshew.
We got to see what we have in Jenny Varentis before we make a decision going forward. All right, the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weak Side Podcast featuring Jenny and Connor and the Albert Breer Show, which usually has Albert Breer on it. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for each one. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.